Hello and welcome to Kayncast, a podcast that provides commentary on the economy and financial markets by the Kayne Anderson Rudnick Investment Management Team.
Hello, this is Ben Falcone, Managing Director with Kayne Anderson Rudnick. And with me today, I have Craig Thrasher, Portfolio Manager of the Kayne Anderson Rudnick International Small Cap Strategy. Welcome, Craig. Craig, non-U.S. equity markets have started the year fairly flat to up in the low single digits. Can you provide your observations on first quarter performance for international and emerging small and mid-cap equities?
Well, it's important to remember that returns for international stocks in the U.S. are going to be reported in U.S. dollar terms, which is going to include the local currency return and then the return of the local currency relative to the U.S. dollar. In the first quarter, U.S. dollar appreciated about 4%, which is a little unusual, and that was a headwind for international equities, again, reported in U.S. dollar terms for this quarter. So if you look at our benchmark, international small cap, in local currencies, they were up approximately 6%, but with that currency headwind, in U.S. dollar terms, our benchmark was up just slightly over 2%, as you said. Now, you know, 6%, I guess you could say, comparing to something like the S&P 500, which was up about 10.5% in the first quarter. As I'd say a lot of people are aware, the returns of the S&P to a large extent are being driven by some of the huge mega cap companies out there like NVIDIA, Microsoft, Google, et cetera. So if you just compare small caps in the U.S., say the Russell 2000 was up about 5%. So what we'd say is international small caps, currency aside, we're up a comparable amount. Now, some quarters that currency effect's going to be positive, some quarters it's going to be negative, but overall, we would really consider that short-term noise that's going to cancel out over the long term.
Craig, can you provide our listeners with a few of the key contributors and detractors to your portfolio during the first quarter?
For our international portfolio, the Swedish company SkiStar was a top contributor during the first quarter. SkiStar is the largest ski resort operator in Scandinavia, and the company had really strong earnings this quarter and an excellent outlook for the 2024 season as a whole. It's been a very strong winter in Scandinavia. In particular, they've had a very good winter relative to some of the alternatives in Europe. So like the Swiss Alps, for example, had a much warmer winter. And so people have been increasingly going to Scandinavia for better snow. Another contributor to performance in the quarter is a company called Hypoport in Germany. Hypoport's most important business is called Europace, which is Germany's leading transaction platform for a lot of different financial transactions, including mortgages. And activity in these areas has been under pressure for quite some time due to the significant rise that we've seen in interest rates. And what we've seen recently is interest rates moderating, and we've seen lending activity bottom out and actually start to improve recently, and the stock has reflected that more positive outlook for the business. Other contributors in the first quarter included Hytion International, Grupo Mutu Online, and Howden Joinery. On the other side, our largest detractor from performance in the quarter was a UK company called FDM. FDM recruits, trains, and deploys information technology professionals around the world, and financial services firms for FDM are the majority of their client base. And what we've seen over the last year or so is there's been significant stress in the global financial services industry, and so some of their clients have delayed decisions around project commencements and consultant placements and things like that, which is led to a diminished revenue and earnings for the company. And most importantly, outlook for 2024 is not that great. And so you've seen that reflected in the stock price. Another detractor from performance in the first quarter is a company called Mercari, which is an online marketplace business that's listed in Japan. In the case of Mercari, what you saw in the first quarter is that they've indicated that they expect margins to come under pressure in the coming quarters as they've started to invest in a couple of newer initiatives. And so anytime you see expectations for margins come down, generally speaking, investors don't like to see that. And so you've seen the stock come down there. And while we're not obviously big fans of declining margins, when we invested in Mercari, the real core thesis is around their core marketplace business in Japan, which remains quite vibrant and we think quite valuable. Other detractors in the first quarter included Sarana Manara, Baltic Classifieds, and Integrafin.
Craig, Japan was noticeably a strong performer this quarter, and the strategy is typically underweight Japan. Is there a thematic reason for this underweight, and where do you see opportunities there?
Well, Japan's the largest country in the benchmark, and we're the place where there's the most listed companies in our universe. So we're always looking at companies in Japan, and we certainly aren't underweight due to any top-down analysis of Japan, although it is true that Japan's economy has been quite stagnant for many years. The population is declining, and corporate governance is obviously in Japan notoriously weak. These are all things that are well known. But if we go back to 2012, all that information was also well known. We were overweight in Japan, and now we're underweight. So I guess the question would be, what's changed there? And I would say a number of things. If we go back to the pre-Abenomics days, the market in Japan had been weak for some time. The big negatives that I just mentioned were all obviously well known, and investors felt like they had no reason to invest in Japan. But there are obviously some great companies in Japan, and back in 2012, those companies were cheap relative to pretty much everywhere else in the world, and so we owned a number of them in our portfolios, and as I said, we were overweight Japan. Now, since Abenomics, you've seen a lot of things happen. The Bank of Japan has embarked on some very aggressive monetary policy, which included negative interest rates. But maybe even more important than that, I would say the Bank of Japan began buying stocks. And we've seen statistics recently indicating that the Bank of Japan owns over 7% of all Japanese listed equities and 55% of the entire Japanese ETF market. So I think it's pretty obvious that that's had a significant impact on market prices, and stocks obviously for in recent years have been going up a lot. And you know, once stock prices start going up, you start seeing investor sentiment as it relates to Japan change, and now investors feel like they need to own Japan. But I would say, going back to those negatives that I mentioned of population decline, more or less no growth economy, poor corporate governance, these things haven't changed. And while I would say on the governance front, we have heard a lot of discussion recently about attempts in Japan to improve corporate governance. We think the needle has moved to some extent, but we think that the real impact, more than anything, has just been the impact on sentiment, and that Japanese prices going up has been more of a driver of the sentiment change in Japan. And we would say that's even to the point now where if we find a company in Japan that meets our qualitative criteria in terms of investment, most of the time we feel like we actually have to pay more to own that same business in Japan than we would elsewhere in the world. And, you know, we don't think that's the right thing to do for our clients. Some of our peers in international investing are not comfortable deviating from their benchmark in terms of their country or sector weights. And so with Japan being the largest country in the benchmark, say 20 to 25% of the benchmark, then they're going to have approximately 20 to 25% of their portfolio in Japan. And, you know, I kind of call this outsourcing your capital allocation to MSCI, and we're not big fans of doing that. So what we try to do is just go wherever in the world we can find the best companies at the best valuations. And right now, it's hard for us to find those kinds of companies that meet both of those criteria within Japan. Now, if that changes, obviously, we'll happily allocate more to Japan. And if it doesn't, we're happy to own businesses elsewhere around the world at what we think are better valuations.
Craig, getting somewhat less publicity within international small caps, emerging markets have performed strongly over the past year with returns north of 20%. What's driving this, and where do you see opportunities going forward?
Well, again, I would say there's a number of factors at play, but probably the most important factor is simply the country weights within emerging markets, and specifically within EM small cap. In EM small cap, India is the largest country in the benchmark at about 25%. And the Indian market really has been on a tear for some time, particularly over the last year. Small caps in India are up approximately 50% over the last year. That compares to, you know, large caps or all cap benchmark in India is up 37%. And so, you know, when you have the largest country in your benchmark going up substantially, obviously that's going to have an impact on performance. The next largest country weight in EM small cap is Taiwan at about 22-23%. Taiwan small caps have also performed well. Taiwan, actually all caps have done well over the last year. There's a lot of companies in Taiwan that are seen as beneficiaries of artificial intelligence. And so that's been somewhat of a trend. On the other side, an important factor is China. China is the largest weight in the all cap benchmark for MSCI, but it's a much smaller weight in EM small cap at about 7 to 8%. And as we all know, China's been one of the worst performing markets in the world recently, with the number of economic and geopolitical concerns. So that's been an important driver of the performance difference as well.
Craig, earnings growth drives long-term performance. Can you speak broadly on what you're seeing in terms of the earnings growth coming from your particular strategies, as well as your longer-term expectations?
Well, I don't disagree overall with the direction of the question that that earnings is going to drive investment performance to some extent, but I would add some caveats. Obviously, earnings growth is important, but we do think also that valuation matters. So I guess if we set that aside and assume that you're not overpaying or underpaying for companies, yes, earnings growth is going to be a large driver of performance. But I would say in addition to that, I would say don't overlook dividend yield as a performance driver. So this might surprise some people, given that we're small cap investors, but the dividend yield on our portfolio is actually 2.7%. And we have some companies that are paying no dividends, but we also have a number of companies that are paying, say, 5% or more in dividends. And this is really mostly due to just different capital allocation practices around the world relative to the U.S. But I'd say if your starting point on an investment is that you get a 5 to 6% dividend yield on a company, you know, the growth in earnings that you would need to drive acceptable returns is much lower. So, you know, again, that's another caveat that I would add in. But going back to your main point, again, I'm not saying I disagree with the gist of it. Growth in earnings is certainly important. And while we do have companies that have higher dividend yields, maybe somewhat lower growth expectations for those businesses, overall, we do think that we own companies that should be able to grow at a healthy rate over time.
Craig, as always, thanks for taking the time to provide your insight to our KaneCast listeners.
You've just listened to KaneCast. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Spotify. For more of our investing insights, head over to our website, www.kane.com. KaneCast is the official podcast series of Kane Anderson Rudnick Investment Management, CAR. This material is provided as a matter of general information and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast or research. The opinions expressed herein are those of the speakers and are not necessarily the opinions of CAR or its affiliates, are current as of the date and time of the recording, and are subject to change at any time due to changes in market or economic conditions. The information and opinions contained in this material are derived from proprietary and non-proprietary sources deemed by CAR to be reliable and are not necessarily all-inclusive. CAR does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of this information. This communication should not be construed as an offer or solicitation to purchase or sell any security. Individuals should consult with a qualified financial professional before making any investment decisions. Reliance upon information in this material is at the sole discretion of the listener. To the extent any performance is discussed, past performance is not indicative of future results.